Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, but I'm party.
And Jake Latondras.
And bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. And joining me on the other line today, Daniel LaRusso. No, I'm just kidding. Dispense. I will never, as long as we're friends, I will never let you live down the night that you told me that you were at karate. You were at the dojo.
Yeah, well, man, that place gets weirder and weirder every time.
It wasn't the point that you told me that you were at karate, is you left us, you left me hanging for like 30 or 45 minutes to tell me that it was your son.
Yeah. No, I'm not a fighter, man. I don't need to have those skills. My temper get the best of me.
Well, Spence, when we left the story last week, Thunder Rolls, you and Wes had come up with the perfect chemistry.
Yep.
And found out what the injection molded was gonna cost, but. Yep. About the same time you'd lost your eye and you were deciding you moving back to Memphis.
Yep. So all right. So we got this chemical. We got this custom polycarbonate blend, and it was pretty bad to the bone. It was very strong, dense, and it was UV resistant. Like it wasn't going to change colors. It was heat resistant. It was heat resistant up to 512 degrees. So it was a medical grade plastic that you could literally autoclave to disinfect, and it could be used as part of an implant or something like that. So it could be sterilized and all this. And so, you know, we have this plastic that we thought was just super, super hard and dense, and you know, we thought, man, this is going to be great. If we can make a call out of this stuff, It would be incredible. It would be hard and it wouldn't break, and we could offer like a lifetime guarantee. And so we kind of went down this trail, and then we really stubbed our toe because we couldn't find anybody to build an injection mold for us. And we had a 40, call.
Was it 40,000? Was the
something like, yeah, that
price?
Was, yeah, we might have found one a little bit cheaper in the 30s or something, but it required a bazillion. You had to sign a commitment to purchase a bazillion parts, and so it was all just, it was like a ton of money, and we really weren't looking for a business. You know, neither one of us were. We were really kind of, it started, we were really going to do this more or less just as a kind of a silly hobby, and see if we could sell it to some of these people that were talking about them just kind of on the internet, you know, and see what we could come up with. And so Wes had actually designed, he took the perfect ult that, or what I thought was the perfect ult, mine, and he drew it up, and Wes is an engineer, so, I mean, we had a CAD drawing with all the different dimensions, and, I mean, it was super official, and tolerances, and all this stuff that I didn't know anything about. And, so he had this in a drawing, and we showed it to a few people, and kind of got these molds priced out, and we got the prices back, and we're like, well, you know, that's not going to work. And along about the time, maybe, I don't know, maybe maybe a month before my eye started acting up or something, right about the same time, Wes called me one day and he said, "Man, you're not going to believe this." And I said, "What?" And he said, "I just got asked to be on the board of the engineering program for Christian Brothers University." And that was where he had gone to school. And it's an engineering school, private school in Memphis, and it's a good school. And I was like, "Really?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, congratulations, you know." He went, "No, you don't get it." He said, "Guess what? Christian Brothers University just got donated." And I said, "What's that?" He said, "A wealthy benefactor just gave the school a top of the line injection mold machine," which is, I don't know how much those things cost, but they're $1 bazillion. And I was like, "You're kidding." And he goes, "Yeah." And he said, "On top of that, they want to pick like 3 projects where they can make parts for somebody. And said they would sell us the parts for whatever, the per part price we've gotten, you know, from the market." Basically said, "Look, we got to apply, like give them a little business plan, make an application, and they're going to accept a couple projects to make some parts for people." But he said, "Nobody's going to apply. Nobody knows about it." And he said, "I'm on the board." And he said, "So we need to make these duck calls." And I said, "Well, what's it going to cost to get us the mold made?" And he said, "Well, they said that if I would design the mold, like how it went together and how the cavities, the dimensions and all that stuff in a CAD program, they had a CNC mill that could cut the mold and we would make it out of aluminum instead of stainless steel. So it would be a lot cheaper." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "Now the downside to that is we'll only be able to make like maybe 5,000 to 10,000 parts out of this mold because it's aluminum. And aluminum, when aluminum gets hot, you know, it expands different than stainless steel, I guess. So over the life right. of an aluminum mold, it just doesn't last as long. It gets sloppy." And I was like, "You're kidding me." And he goes, "Yeah." He said, "So they're basically offering, if they pick us up, they'll build us a mold for free, and all we have to do is supply the material and pay them like 75% of whatever the best bid from the market we could get on the per part price." I said, "You're kidding me." He said, "Yeah, we should try it." And I said, "Okay." And I mean, mind you, we're not a business. We weren't intending at this point to create a business. We weren't partners. We weren't anything. We were just like 2 duck hunting buddies goofing around with these calls. And so we priced it out. He got somebody that he knew in the injection molding business, a couple of them, to price it out. And they gave us a per part price. And we took it to the university and we wrote up what we wanted to do and how many parts we thought we were going to, you know, we could make. And so like they said, "Great. They needed money for their graduate assistant program. And they had no way of generating revenue for that department." And so they picked us, and they actually picked one of Wes's classmates, a good buddy of his, who had made this little aftermarket part for a motorcycle, like something that went between the kickstand and the motorcycle. Some he was into crotch rockets or whatever, and he designed this little part, and kind of the same deal as ours. And so boom, we were in. And so in about, I don't know, this would have been fall or winter of 2009, I guess, they started trying to machine us a mold. And they made us a mold, and I mean, it was rough. And I'll never forget the first parts that we got off of it were purple and white because they had been given some white plastic samples or some white polycarbonate and some purple polycarbonate. And the way the machine worked, it pulled the polycarbonate comes in these little pellets. They're like about the size of a BB, except they're shaped like a little barrel. And so they had these drums of this material, and there was like a white material that was a prototype material. And then they had a purple material that was more of a generic, just a plain old polycarbonate. And so they would run some stuff with the white because it was really cheap. And then when they kind of got the machine warmed up and going like they wanted it, they would put the purple in there. And so generally speaking, all the sample parts would be like white and purple mixed together. I mean, in this crazy concoction. And so to kind of set the stage here, I've got a patch on my eye because it's just all jacked up, and I'm driving back and forth to get surgery now. And somewhere along about, I don't know, the fall or winter there, Wes calls me and goes, man, you need to come by the school and meet me up there. And the director of the department was an Asian guy, kind of spoke broken English. He said he thinks he's got a part, but they don't know how to test it to see if it works. And I said, are you talking about like literally putting a reed in it and blowing it? He said, yeah. And I said, okay. So I after an eye appointment, I went down there to the school, and I walk in, and it's like science fair projects from the last 20 years of the most intelligent engineers, you know, the city of Memphis has to offer. And I walk through a maze of these old science fair projects and, you know, engineering, you know, master's degree, you know, program, their final senior projects and stuff. And there's just stuff laying everywhere. It's like a mad scientist lab. And I walk over there, and there's a pile of the crummiest, nappiest, ugliest looking duck call parts. It looked like if you'd taken 50 plastic duck calls and taken a welding torch to them and melted them all down. They were deformed and melted and all these different shapes. And I mean, they just looked horrible. And around behind the machine comes this little Asian guy, Chinese kid. And I mean, he can't speak any English, and he's like a sophomore in college or a junior or something. And he says, you duck call man. And I said, dude, what? You duck call man. And I said, duck call man? Yeah, duck. Quack, 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 quack. I said, yeah, I guess that's me. And he said, we got your part ready. And he had a box, and it was full of just the junkiest looking parts. I mean, they had holes all in them, and the material wasn't smooth. And I mean, but my eyes lit up. We had something, you know. Man, they were so crummy, and so, I mean, just every possible. I mean, it looked like you'd mashed them up and run them through a blender and heated them up, and melted them down, and remolded them 25 times. And so I looked through there and tried to pick the best one out. And I mean, some of them had holes all in them in the exhaust. And I found one that had a decent shape to it. And I, you know, kind of stuck it but he had like one or two barrels made up for me. And at this point, this is all just an experiment. Okay. This is not, again, we don't have a business, and we don't even know what we're going to call these things or what we're going to do with them. And so he made us the most simple mold that he could make, which was just our drawing at this point was literally the exact dimensions of an old barrel. And then it was an old insert, but it was my modifications on an old insert. And so I found the best one I could find. And I put a reed and a cork in it, and I blew it, and I got a pretty decent quack out of it. I mean, it made a little bit of noise, but the parts didn't go together exactly, and so we were pretty fired up. I mean, enough that I made a video on my cell phone at the time and sent it to Wes and was like, I think I can work with this. And so we through some trial and error, we helped them build another mold, and we learned some of the craziest, weirdest things about injection molding. One of which is that as the mold gets hot, you know, so the plastic has to get melted and then shot in there as a liquid. And, right. And once it's shot in there, then it has to get hard. So it has to go from a really hot temperature hard to it has to cool off to dry. Otherwise, it, you know, or to harden, whatever you want to call it. And so this first mold had no ability to cool down. So you'd make a part, you'd shoot, you know, the mold itself would be cold, and you'd shoot, you know, bazillion degree molten plastic into it, and it would heat the mold up, and it would make a nice part, but then the part, the mold would get hot. And so while it was supposed to be hardening, it would kind of like harden but melt a little bit, if that makes sense. It wouldn't, it wouldn't harden and freeze in shape. And so the guy building us the mold was literally just a college professor and a junior engineering student, and they had no idea what they were doing. They just had access to this machine. So Wes gets on the horn, and we start researching, and we learn that if you cool, if you put cooling channels in the mold with liquid, then when you shoot the the part in there, you can regulate the temperature of the mold by having liquid that circulates through there. Well, that's all cool and good and everything, but that means you have to machine the mold different. You have to machine it where it's got a little port where you can actually put this liquid circulating the machine, kind of like a radiator or a coolant system. Well, so we start looking, and the injection mold machine has the ability to add on one of these coolant machine things, but it doesn't have one. And so we start doing some research, and we find one that we can buy for them, and it was pretty cheap. And so we buy this coolant machine, we add it onto the mold, and we, in the process, we modified the mold a little bit so that it could cool off. And we started making parts, and they got better, and they got better. But they could only make about 10 parts at a time because the mold would get hot, and then it would start to, the parts would get distorted and not good. So over the next 6 to 8 months, now I'm back in Memphis because we've bailed out of seminary with health problems, and I'm doing some classes online trying to figure out what I want to do. I'm doing a little bit of bookkeeping. I had some accounting background, and I'm doing some side job bookkeeping work for people, kind of just making ends meet. And over the next 6 to 8 months, we figured out how to get this mold to make parts that sounded like a duck call. And we ended up making, we bought slabs of aluminum for them and ended up making four molds. And by the time the first one was really rough, the second one got a little bit better, the third one got a little bit better, and then on the fourth one, was we actually built one from scratch that was what our part was going to look like. It was a finished part. And we built a barrel mold, and we built an insert mold, two separate molds. And so over the course of 8 months, we had invested a total of about $200 in polycarbonate plastic and about $500 in aluminum slabs that they machined for us. And so Wes and I had the opportunity to literally stand there with Dr. Shea as he machined out the part. And so from the first sample until we got where we were like, okay, we're going to make a part that we could try to sell, we came up with what we were going to call it and the design. And that's where the very first part that we made was called the BSOD, which stood for Black Stick of Death. And that came from, we went through all the web forums. You know, in the previous time we talked, I told you that there was all this chatter on all these forums. And right. There were all these kind of nicknames, cult nicknames kind of thing for the different calls for cutdowns. And so we went through and made a list of all of them, and we had a whole slew of names, and we narrowed it down to, we were either going to call them, we had three choices. The three choices were Rolling Thunders or Kevorkians or BSODs, but we weren't sure how to, so we couldn't decide between those three. And the story behind those was, Rolling Thunders, I thought about Thunder Stick, Thunder, you know, all these different variations on that.
Who came up with that one?
The guy that I was introduced to duck hunting, you know, by my dad and his brother, and influenced strongly by some of the guys I watched as a kid. But when I was just out of college, I learned, really feel like I learned how to duck hunt from a guy that was kind of one of the old time guides. And he had an outfitter allocation in Canada, and he went by the name of Rolling Thunder. And if you asked him why that was his outfitter service, he said, man, because when people hear that thunder rolling off in the distance, he said, that's what I want to be known by. He said, I want to be known as the guy who's making that thunder roll over there in the distance. And I thought that was such a cool name. And so, you know, a lot of this stuff that we were doing with the calls, I was bouncing off of him and getting ideas and suggestions from him.
We know where the Kevorkian came from. For a lot of you younger people that's listening to this, Dr. Kevorkian is the one that used to help people commit suicide.
Yeah, self-assisted suicide. Self-assisted suicide. And there's a hole in Biomeda called the Kevorkian. We were trying to come up with names that we could market this thing around. So the conversation now was... The conversation was about how could we market this and be like, punch this cut down thing in the mouth and we're kind of the new thing and something we could kind of hang marketing around. And Kevorkian was the strongest, but then we just kind of were like, man, you know, number one, are people going to know who Dr. Kevorkian was? He had already died. That was a little bit dark, you know, and then that's so many letters, like K-E-V, you know, O, like how, what would you do with all those letters? How would you write it on the call? How would you place it? How would you, you know, mess with all this stuff? And so it was between those three options. Okay. And Wes and I decided that we would take our best friends at the time, our best hunting buddies, to dinner one night and tell them about our idea. And so we did. We went to Mortimer's restaurant on at the end of Perkins in Memphis, Perkins in Summer. And we had three or four of our best friends and set them down. And we were like, they kind of knew that we were experimenting with this thing. And we set them down and we had a couple of the samples. And we were like, guys, I think we've done it. And we said, I think we're going to try to sell these things. And we need y'all's help deciding what we should call them. And so we kind of pitched the three ideas. And one of them said, man, you need to call it the Black Stick of Death. That's the best name of all of them. It's not about suicide. And it's not about, you know, it's just, it's easy. And it's, and you need to use the acronym BSOD. And that was kind of what Wes and I were leaning towards. And then somebody else said, man, you should think further ahead and call this thing Rolling Thunder Duck Calls or Rolling Thunder, you know, Calls or something like that. And be like your company name and then call the model the BSOD. And I was like, well, that's a lot. That's confusing. And they were like, yeah, but, you know, you may want to make another call at some point. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, you're crazy. Like, I mean, if you understand a cut down and that's the last call you need, you know, cut down guys blow one call and they got it on a single lanyard. And, you know, they're proud of not having 24 calls hanging around their neck. It's just, you know, one loop and one call and that's all, you know, that's all you need. And I don't remember which one of them it was, but they were like, man, I just think y'all think a little bit bigger picture than that. And so Wes and I kind of chewed on it. And a couple of them were like, nah, I don't think Stick of Death is really wordy. That's busy. And so we had mixed opinions. And we left dinner that night. And Wes and I sat down and kind of put our heads together. And we decided that what we would do, we were the other wrinkle that I'll throw at virtually an exact replica of the exterior shape of an old duck call. And we did all kinds of research on licensing and patents and intellectual property because we really didn't want to infringe upon the old family's property. And we actually, at one point, we got a buddy of ours who is an attorney to reach out to them and see if they would license us the PS Ault name so that we could make a call that was identical to theirs, different material, our mold, but basically just license their name, just like Bandit does with waders, or Drake does with camouflage patterns, or any of the other companies, you know, that license something, the use of a property. And so, but the Ault family at that time was pretty disorganized in terms of their ownership and whatnot. And so we just decided that since we had changed the tone board, that we really had made it ours. And since they weren't making calls at all at the time, they were completely defunct and not functional as a business. We decided that as long as we kind of changed the exterior shape a little bit, we would be okay. But we didn't really know how. And so as we kind of were going through it, somewhere along the lines, we decided, we were like, man, what if we put big block letters down the sides of the barrel that said BSOD, and then it would look like an Ault, you know, its shape, its mouthpiece, and its insert and everything, but it would have these giant letters down the side of it. And then if for some reason the Ault family just came out of the woodwork and said, hey, y'all stole our property, we could say, nah, look, we did our tone board different, and we did our barrel different, and while it's influenced by you guys real strongly, and I mean, nobody would doubt where that shape came from and all that, at the same time, nobody would look at it and say that's a direct copy. They would have to say you guys made that your own. And so we landed on the Black Stick of Death by Rolling Thunder, and since we were going for Rolling Thunder, we decided, you know what, let's just go with game calls, because I mean, I turkey hunted, West turkey hunted as much as we duck hunted. And so we thought, well, if we're going to think big, let's call it game calls. And that way we keep ourselves open to whatever may come down the pipe. And so we went back to the school and we said, okay, we got our insert, we got our barrel shaped the way we like it. And what we want to do is we want to add these letters to our mold, to both sides of the cavity of the mold. And we want them to be raised. So a raised letter on a smooth surface would have been further cutting out material in the mold, right? So we already had our mold like we liked it. So we went back into both sides of it, and with the mill, we milled out the letters BSOD. And if you look at one of the old, one of our very first calls, well, first, I don't know, 5 years that we were around, you can see in the letters, the BSOD, you can actually see where that mill bit milled out the letters BSOD, because it was something we did after the fact. And so now we got our barrel, now we got our inserts, and it says BSOD, and we're like, all right, let's let this thing rip. And so we got a call. You want to check up right here?
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be a great stopping point. That'd be a
point. I'm not terribly interesting right now. I'm kind of delivering facts. You want me to try to wrap that up better where you can edit it? And
No, it's fine. I love the way you ended with the we got a call. See who you got a call from next week.
Do what?
I said, we'll see who you got a call from next week. Hey, I got to ask you before you go, though. This is away from the story. I saw that you were hunting with some shared friends one day this week.
Who's that?
You were with old Brooks and the...
Oh, yeah.
Brooks and Murray, and was your buddy Ed Wall with y'all?
Oh yeah, little Debbie, and DJ the Chocolate Mule, and yeah, the whole gang. Harry, Benny, Harry's brother-in-law, the whole crew.
Now, when I gotta ask you this: who runs the hole when you and Brooks get together?
Who like who's the whole boss or who? Yeah, who,
yeah,
goes
yeah.
Get
who kind of directs everything when you and Brooks get together?
Brooks a lot of times, but it kind of depends on whose turf we're on. You know, like if we're hunting my spot, then I kind of run it. If we're hunting his spot, then he runs it. But it's but Brooks is a more benevolent dictator than I am. I'm kind of a jerk. I don't know. I'm not very nice. Brooks is very demanding, but he's very gracious. He just tells you like, hey, you need to move. You're in a bad spot. Don't stand right there. Or, you know, he just tells people what to do. It's like he's not worried about hurting somebody's feelings. I sit over there and stew about it for a long time, worried about hurting somebody's feelings until I just blow up. And instead of just, you know, I'm more of a stuffer, and it's hard for me to say constructive things without just being mean.
Was Brooks' dad with y'all?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't.
I've heard about it, man. They have so much fun together. They get so mad at each other.
Greg is the most colorful person I've ever met. He can overcomplicate a sentence better than anybody that's ever walked on the face of the earth. And he has a way of saying things that's just awesome. I mean, he's very much a wordsmith, but he's a colorful guy. We actually early in the week we were hunting this new place that Brooks and Harrison bought. It's an island, and man, it is really really cool. And so up there, Brooks definitely runs the show. I was an invited guest.
Well, that would be that'd be something to see. Man, I would just stand back and just watch them. Be like watching a symphony orchestra for the first time. It'd be pretty neat to see.
Brooks is a pretty good duck caller. He's one of the best duck callers I've probably ever hunted with. He's got a lot of power, but he's got a lot of finesse. And he knows when to call, and I mean, when you hunt with Brooks, you don't have to worry about calling. But especially if it's a private place where you're not, you know, competing with a bazillion other people.
And Big Murr, where does Big Murr fit into all of this? What personality is he in the group?
Oh gosh, Murray is a comedian. I mean, Murray is just hysterical. Things Murray comes up with would blow your mind. I mean, and he keeps everybody honest. I mean, he's constantly busting everybody's balls. Like he's on Eddie's case all the time. Eddie has that big chocolate dog that he takes pictures of nonstop, and named DJ. Deechy is his name, named after that football player from Ole Miss, and so Murray calls him DJ because he's got that, you know, little accent mark above the E, and he said that's French, you know, you got to say it DJ, and Eddie just is in love with that dog. Well, one morning while we were there, that dog took a monster poop, you know, right outside the camp. And the dog is huge. Literally, he probably weighs 125 pounds. And I know there's a lot of people who say, you know, I got a 100-pound lab or whatever. And really what they have is about an 80-pound lab. This dog is legit every bit of 120, 125 pounds. And Murray goes, Eddie, go get one of them orange traffic cones and put it over here by this stool sample your dog left. He said, one of Harrison's kids is going to be riding the side-by-side by here and high-center it on this pile of turds if you don't mark it for everybody. Stuff like that nonstop, you know, with Murray.
Well, another one that I've recently got to know is Harrison. So Harrison's got to be the silent killer.
Oh, yeah, Harrison's probably the nicest individual I've ever met. I mean, everything Harrison has is available to be borrowed, used. Like, he's the one, literally one of the most giving people I've ever been around. I've never heard Harrison be harsh to somebody. He's just so laid back, easygoing, kind, generous, you know, come anytime. I mean, he is really, really a cool guy.
But when the lights come on, he's ready to kill, right?
Oh, ain't no doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it.
The ball buster, the silent killer, the whole ball.
Yeah. Yeah, Harrison and Brooks together is a hilarious but great dynamic because, you know, Harrison wields the bigger stick, but Brooks is in charge, and so Harrison, you know, they're never divided. At least they don't show it. They're like the perfect partnership. Harrison's 100% on board with whatever Brooks wants to do. And he doesn't have to say a word. Like, when Brooks says it, Harry's, you know, organizing the troops to do it. But, like, in their business, it's, you know, it's Harrison's, I guess it's Harrison's business. And
it is.
And
yeah.
But Brooks is kind of the general in charge, you know. And they duck hunt that way, you know. They're just literally that group of people is some of the best people I've ever been around in my life. They're all colorful, but they're all such solid human beings, you know. They have their lives in order and great family guys, and these are not guys that are running around, you know, womanizing and acting a fool. And I mean, these are grown men who care about their families, care about their kids, and love killing stuff. And so it's just really fun to, they've been some of my favorite people that I've met in the last 3 or 4 years. Just getting to know them and hang out with them has really been a bright spot.
Well, you think any more personalities, we'll talk about it next week, that you have to have in the whole to make the perfect whole, perfect group of people. Vince, I enjoyed it, man. Merry Christmas to you. And
yeah.
Sorry, that one's
a little bit boring. I'll try to.
Hey, for the people that buy your calls, that is not boring at all. All these people that buy your calls are listening to this. It's a huge series.
Well,
hey, I gotta ask you this: those first prototypes, where are they?
Yeah,
the purple and white.
They're in my house. They're in one of those banker's boxes upstairs in my. My old tuning room.
That's pretty cool. I got to send me a picture sometime. But Spence, again, Merry Christmas. We will talk again the end of next week. Thank you again for taking time to be here.
All right, buddy.
All right. Thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.